It's called the Canadian. It's Canada's crack transcontinental train. Doesn't mean it's cracked. It means it's really a good train. And it runs from Toronto to Vancouver, British Columbia. It's really an epic journey that takes 4 days. One of the major draws to ride this cruise line on rails is its dome cars. These bubble-top cars give you a 360-degree view of the gorgeous scenery you are passing through. We saw some of the most beautiful sights that I've ever seen. The Canadian Rockies. One time as we were riding along, there was a bald eagle that was flying right with us. But one of the things you quickly notice as you're sitting up in the dome car is that there are signal lights along the track, about every mile. Periodically, we had yellow and red lights, and of course, with a red signal, we stopped. I mean, we literally stopped on the track. I mean, we could be out in nowhere, but we stopped, and which indicated that there was traffic, there was a train ahead of us. The track was not clear. And so we waited until the red light turned green, and then we proceeded. And of course, how necessary are these signal lights? Because there would be one collision after another if these lights were not there to direct, guide, to tell the engineer when to go, when to stop. Maybe some of you remember the great train wreck of 1918. It killed 101 people. This took place outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Two trains came around the corner at each other, both going 50 to 60 miles an hour. Well, this morning our focus will be on being a signal light. Just as these signal lights keep integrity of rail travel, so the signal lights that I want to talk to you about, their signal light is crucial and necessary for the survival of our society. Now, as Jesus looked lovingly out over the multitudes, he saw sheep without a shepherd. He saw the disintegration of life at every point. He saw the things that they needed the most. They needed salt in order that their corruption could be arrested. They needed light in order that their doom and darkness could be dispelled. Life then and now is corrupted and it's decayed. And it is dark and it is darkening, which again means salt and light are desperately needed. Ladies and gentlemen, your life as a Christian is desperately needed in this world. Now, the effects of salt and light both contrast and complement each other. For example, salt is hidden, whereas light is obvious. Salt works secretly while light works openly. Salt works within while light works from without. Salt is more indirect, an indirect influence of the gospel, while light is more direct and communicative. Salt works primarily through our living, while light works mainly through what we teach and preach. Salt usually is more negative, while it retards corruption, and light is more positive. It not only reveals what is wrong and false, but helps produce what is righteous and true. This morning our focus is on you are the light of the world. And we'll study this important reality by seeing, and these are words that Christ used, what we are. Point number two, where are we to be found? And how are we to be seen where we are found? And our last point is why we are to be seen. Well, point number one is what we are. And if you look at Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, it tells us what we are. It says, "Ye are the light of the world." Now, it has been said that this is the greatest compliment that was ever paid to the individual Christian, for here Jesus commands the Christian to be what he himself is, and that is the light of the world. Remember, he said in John chapter 8, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Now, when Jesus spoke these words, he was using an expression that was quite familiar to the Jewish people. For they themselves spoke of Jerusalem as a light to the Gentiles, and a famous rabbi was often called a lamp of Israel. But one thing the Jews were very sure of, and that was that no one kindled his own light. And yes, Jerusalem was indeed a light to the Gentiles, but God lit Israel's light. David wrote in Psalm 36, verse 9, For with thee is the fountain of life, and in thy light we see light. And John added in 1 John chapter 5, God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. But again, Christ is telling us here, what he is, we as his believers are too. We are a reflection of his light. Paul speaks in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6, For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, notice, has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. What Paul is saying here is, as God's light, we can now enlighten men because we are given the knowledge of God's glory as we have seen in the face of Jesus Christ. And I say, wow, what a marvelous calling. We are what Jesus was in this world. How can you get any better than that? We are what Jesus was in this world. And for him to entrust this light to us must say something very wonderful about his trust in us. Which brings us to point number two, where as light are we to be? Where are we to be found? Well, notice the end of verse 14 and then verse 15. Christ says, A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. The houses in Palestine were naturally dark because they had only one little circular window, perhaps not more than 18 inches across. And so the lamp was extremely important to the inhabitants of the house, for it was their only source of light. It had to be seen if there was to be light in the house. And so the point here is, this lamp, this necessary lamp, this lighted lamp was useless if it was placed under a bushel. No light would be seen if it was covered. And likewise, you and I, as the light of the world, are useless if we are not being light in this world. If we are not fulfilling our calling. If we are not being seen. If we are not being visible. Someone has rightly said, A man's Christianity should be perfectly visible to all men, which tells us it must be set on a hill. It must be a lighted candlestick. A Christian's witness must be obvious. If people look at your life and they wonder, is he a Christian or not? Your light is being covered by a bushel. What does that mean? I believe your light is being covered by sin. which raises the question, in what ways, as the light of the world, are we thus to be seen? In what manner is the light of Christ to shine through us? Well, let me give you three ways. Number one, by being an example. Now, this example of Jesus' light-filled righteousness is to be seen not only in the church, but outside these four walls. You know, I think too often we can become really good Christians when we're at church. You know, we're amongst all these other Christians. You know, there's the saying, you're a Christian on Sunday, but then you're a heathen on Monday. The point is, Jesus didn't say you are the light of the church. He said you are the light of the world. And so our Christianity should be just as bright on Monday in the world as it is on Sunday. So he says you are the light of the world, which means our Christianity should be visible in the way we treat others. For example, how we treat the waitress or waiter at the restaurant, our fellow employees, our employer, our teachers, other students, our spouse, our children, our parents, our coaches. How we treat strangers, how we treat the people we are traveling with. The point is the life, the righteousness, the beauty, the graciousness, the kindness, the joy, the peace, the calm, the trust of Jesus in his Father's will should all be seen through us by others. We are to be an example of a Christian, Paul told Timothy, in word and conversation and charity and spirit and faith and purity. But not only are we to be seen as a Christ-like example, a second way as light we are to be seen is as a guide. The light of life, the example we are as Christians, is to be given legs. We are to say to those around us, follow me as I follow Christ. And ladies and gentlemen, the world needs Jesus-like guides. It needs believers who will stand up for Jesus. It needs you and me to be a point of reference, a point of goodness that others can see and follow. There are many people in this world who have not the natural or moral compass, strength, and courage to stand aright by themselves. But if they have a guide who will say, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, they too will follow. If they have someone strong enough to lean on, they too will do the right thing. Think about Winston Churchill during the dark days of World War II. He said to Germany, he said to his people, we will not capitulate, we will not surrender, we will fight these Nazi people. And God used Winston Churchill to give England victory. Please understand, it is the Christian's duty and responsibility to take the stand which weaker brothers will then support. Now, the world is filled with wrong guides. Think about the entertainment industry. Think about the news media. They are not giving us the news. They are trying to shape the news according to their worldview. Think about so many of our politicians. I mean, we're talking about wicked people, hypocritical, deceitful people who hate God, who hate life, who hate Christianity. And they are all blind leaders of the blind who are all falling into the pit. They are sheep going astray, and yet they are earnestly striving to lead us and our children astray. I mean, they believe in what they are preaching and practicing. And so how desperately the world needs, your workplace needs, your school needs, your neighborhood needs, your home needs guiding lights along this river of life. Honestly, there are people waiting and hoping for you and me to lead, to do the right thing, which they do not dare by themselves. There is a better way than the way of the world, which says, eat and drink and be merry, for tomorrow we will die. I say, where is the hope in that philosophy of living? And thankfully, there are those who then see the light and bow the knee to Christ and follow the life that He alone can truly give. And I say to you this morning, I am a 60-year follower of Jesus. And He is reality. He is the real thing. I can speak from experience. Jesus is real. Let me show you. Let me guide you to that path of life where you can find fullness of joy, where you can find pleasures forevermore. Follow me as I follow Christ. But then a third way, as the light of the world, we are to be seen as a warning light. We are to be seen as an example. We are to be seen as a guide. We are to be seen as a warning light. A light is often a warning sign or indicator. Have you ever seen that little yellow light blink at you when you're driving your car? You better stop. You know, it's one thing if it's just on. It's another thing if it's blinking. There's danger ahead. And of course, don't we see these warning lights as we drive? Road construction ahead. Slow down. Be careful. Let them work. Let them live. And likewise, it is the Christian's commission to warn people that there is a hell to shun and a heaven to gain. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. If you sow to the flesh, you will of the flesh reap corruption. The way of the transgressor is always hard. I think of those verses in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12. This is a warning. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief and departing from the living God. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have faith in Jesus Christ, you have an evil heart. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. What does sin do? It leads to unbelief. And what does unbelief lead to? It leads to the hardness of your heart. You don't want a hard heart. When the Word of God is preached, you want to say, Lord, give me ears to hear and a heart to receive your truth, truth that sets me free. And yet, because of unbelief, because of sin, our hearts can become so hardened to the truth that you can even sit through a service like this and say, phooey on you. Frankly, I've lived long enough to know that the world's bridge is out. The world is passing away and the lust thereof. The world's water doesn't satisfy. You and I can travel the world over, but only Jesus can fill the hole in our soul. I see these people, they love to tell you where they've been and where they're going. And they're striving with all their might and all the energy they have and all the resources they have. They're trying to find that gold at the end of the rainbow. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't exist in this world. All these things are going to pass away. But he that doeth the will of God abides forever. Which means our true joy, our true satisfaction, Our true fulfillment is always and eternally found in Jesus. If you want joy, real joy, wonderful joy, let Jesus come into your heart. The point is, and I want to warn you, I want to be a light. I don't want my light to be hid under a bushel. I want it to be set on a candlestick. I want it to be set on a hill so that people can see Jesus' light through me. That the ways of the world ultimately are ways of death. But he that doeth the will of God abides forever. The wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. So I ask you, do you know this Jesus who died your death so that you might forever live? He is the light of life. I can advocate for him. God did not give the gospel of his Son to be a secretive, hidden treasure of a few, but to enlighten every person who comes into this world. The gospel is for all. Whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Which brings us to our last point. Why are we to be seen? Obviously, we've already discussed why we are to be seen. We're to be seen as an example, as a guide, as a warning. But specifically here, what does Christ tell us why we are to be seen? Well, he says in verse 16, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." And here Christ gives us two reasons why our light is to be seen. And the first cause is so that men will see our good works. Now, in the Greek, there are two words for good. We have the word agathos, which simply defines a thing as good in quality. But then there is the word kalos, which means that a thing is not only good, but it is winsome, it's beautiful, it is attractive. Well, the word Jesus used here is kalos, which tells us the good works, the righteous deeds of the Christian must not only be good, they must also be attractive. One author writes, there must be a certain winsomeness in our Christians' goodness. Christians can be good, they can be righteous, they can be holy, but they can be hard. They can be harsh. They can be cold. They can be austere. That doesn't attract people to Jesus. But then there is a Christianity that has a certain charm, appeal, attractiveness, charisma, grace, beauty. And this latter goodness is what Christ says we are to portray, we are to convey. There's nothing wrong with a Christian who smiles. It isn't wrong to smile. It isn't wrong to laugh. It isn't even wrong to have some fun. And this latter goodness, again, is what Christ says we are to exhibit. I say, let's have a Christianity where both truth and mercy are in balance, where both righteousness and love are in sync. And let me add, when we are truly in communion with Christ, his beauty and his holy light will be seen. And then a second reason for letting our light be seen is to glorify our Father who is in heaven. Please grasp the ultimate purpose for letting our light shine. Revealing our good works is not that we are seen, not that attention or praise be brought to us, but to the living God. For he is the goodness in us. Our intent in life should be that in what we do and say, and how we say what we say, and do what we do, that others will see the living God in order that they may glorify Him. Christ says, "Our Father who is in heaven." The reason He says Father is to emphasize God's tenderness, His love, His intimacy. And speaking of His being in heaven declares His majesty, His holiness, as He is pictured dwelling in the glorious splendor of His eternal home. The point is, our good works are to magnify this awesome God, this great God who loves us and gave His Son to die for us. We are to magnify God's grace and God's power. Everything we do should have a God-like quality, which then causes others to give praise to God, who is the source of all that is good. Every good and perfect gift comes from Him. So why should we not exalt and glorify Him? Ladies and gentlemen, the way in which we speak, our manner of living, should lead those around us to glorify. The Greek word used here gives us our English word doxology. It should encourage those around us to give a doxology to the living God. Ladies and gentlemen, our life should be such, it should be so different in a glorious way from the ways of the world. They have to say, it must be God in you. Why else could you live, and would you live, and would you want to live in that way? We don't see enough God-like people in this world. God needs you to be His light. Someone has written, when what we do causes people to be attracted to us rather than to God, to see our human character rather than His divine character, we can be sure that what they see is not His light. Remember, Jesus is the total prohibition of what someone has called theatrical goodness. And so let us never seek to draw the eyes of men to ourselves, Lord, help me, but always, always to direct them to the God who can transform them into His very likeness.